For sure. And Google, another one of those good
the home bases.
All of my devices like in front of me just lit up when I said that. stop. I'm not.
I wish you didn't have headphones. Just come back. Okay, Google, turn the lights on.
Exactly.
Hey everyone, this is TechnoGeek here. Just wanted to give a quick shout out to our latest sponsor, Project Discovery. Now, Project Discovery makes a lot of tools that you probably know of or have even used. One of them is Nuclei, and the latest release of Nuclei is version 3.2. Now, 3.2 comes with a lot of really awesome new features. Two that I really wanted to highlight here for you are the authenticated scanning and the advanced fuzzing support. Now, for authenticated scanning, it used to be that you would have to do all your Nuclei scanning against unauthenticated endpoints, or you'd have to add your cookies manually, all that kind of messy. No more. It's all automatic. You can use existing login templates to automatically log in to your application, and then you can run all your existing Nuclei templates against an authenticated part of the application now to really increase your coverage. The other that I mentioned is advanced fuzzing support. Now, Nuclei had added way back in version 2.8 the ability to fuzz different things, but now they've expanded this comprehensively across the board. So not only can you fuzz in the normal spots, but you can fuzz within headers, you can fuzz within cookies, you can fuzz within specific parts of the body, whether that's in JSON or XML or form data, and so many more things. So if you want to learn more about what came in Nuclei 3.2, go ahead and check out the release blog post over at nux.gg/podcast. That's nux.gg/podcast. Thanks.
Alrighty, guys. I am feeling the podcast energy today, man. We just got off like a awesome brainstorming session on how to make the Critical Thinkers Discord tier super valuable. And now we got our boy Ben back on the pod. Welcome, Ben.
Second time, hopefully it's better than last time. So
nah, dude, we're looking at the podcast analytics and you just see this big boom, this big peak that goes, and I was like, what is that? What did we do right there? And it's like, we had Ben on the podcast.
I'm assuming it's probably the YouTube algorithm loving the user, and probably it makes sense. That was a fun podcast too, though. There's a lot of blind XSS stuff, and I know I'm looking at the notes for this episode, and I feel like we're going to talk more about cross-site scripting anyway, so here we are.
nothing wrong with a good cross-site scripting, man. You gotta love it. But you just came back from B-Sides, right?
Yeah, B-Sides was really, really fun. This is our second year going to B-Sides. Me and Justin Haddix, we host the Bug Bounty Village there, and
nice.
We went back again. We did an event with Adobe. We did some like live hacking events. Not live hacking event, but like live recon more than anything with Adobe. And then, did some workshops and went to some talks, and lots of hackers were in town. I don't know if you saw Nagli, Sam, and Ian were out there.
I saw the pictures, man.
Meta's team was there. Lots of cool people to see and hang out with.
Dude, I feel like B-Sides is just not really on my radar as much as it. I mean, obviously you hear about like DEF CON and NAHM CON and lots of these other, you know, cons pretty often. But for some reason, I always forget about B-Sides San Francisco. So I think that actually is one of the more, maybe it's just me forgetting about it, but I think that is a stealth, really, really good conference. Because I want to say in like 2018, and they had some great, great talks.
Yeah, and I think
a lot of the B-Sides stuff depends on where you are, right? Mm,
mm. Well, B-Sides San Francisco, it's like right before RSA happened. So, I'm not big on RSA because it's enterprise. I don't have really a lot of stake in that game, right? But it's cool to go and everyone comes in for RSA. They go to B-Sides San Francisco, and then it's like some of the more community stuff happens there. But you also have these like big sponsors that are out there too. The cool thing is a lot of these like quote unquote content creators come out. So, you know, like you see people that are going to RSA for that same specific reason and you just run into them at the same time. It's a very exciting week. It's not as exciting as like DEF CON, the summer camp that we have every year, but it makes you like, okay, I'm almost ready for DEF CON.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of, so you said you went to some, you did the bug bounty workshop, which I want to hear more about, but you also went to some cool talks, including one by the Meta team, right? And you said you were pretty impressed with that program, right?
Yeah, actually. So Farah, I've known Farah for years, and you know, she was at Bugcrowd previously, and then she just left and went to Meta, I think. And not recently, but you know, she's been at Meta for a while now. But I just ran into her, you know, it's like, what are you up to? And one of the Bugcrowd folks that was there was like, hey, let's go see this Meta talk. It's supposed to be their bug bounty program. And it is mind blowing to see what Meta is doing with their program, dude. Like, I think their top bounty right now is like 300K if you RC some of their big production sites.
Oh my gosh, dude. Like, imagine popping a 300K bug.
That's a 300K sometimes used to be what HackerOne paid at an event in the early days of like the live hacking events, right? Yeah. And then like Meta's over here like, hey, we pay 300K for an RC. And the other cool thing is that, I don't know if you guys know, they have a loyalty program too. Do you know about that?
Oh, like we're gonna have to bleep that, but yeah.
Like the bleep program that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like,
It
came out of my mouth and I was like, oh, wait, I probably shouldn't say that.
So, the bleep program that you just mentioned. But, you know, they pay you like, they tier you in like different tiers. And then depending on what tier you're on, you get a bonus. So they were saying like, you could probably get, you know, another 20K of bonuses depending on what tier you are, what kind of bugs you find, and things like that. Yeah, and they're doing a promotion for a new bug bounty hunter. They gave me a coupon thing. I've never submitted to the Meta program, but right now, if you submit to them, you get up to X percent on top of your vulnerabilities, which is really cool.
Dude, that, I don't know. Joel, you've done a little hacking on Meta, right? It's an intimidating target, but the payouts are freaking good.
Not a little. You just had a sick XSS, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we did find an XSS on Facebook Core with some caveats. And there is a Space Raccoon blog post about that. However, I will say it is a really cool, group of products and platforms to hack on. It's very, very dense. I think a lot of the people that hack on that are like specialized sort of hackers. Like that is what they focus on. A lot of what they do is just hacking on Meta products. So they're very familiar with the ecosystem and everything and how it works and how stuff communicates with each other and the common types of bugs. And they have their own gadgets and all sorts of stuff. So
I think they've got a cool IoT ecosystem as well, right?
With the portals and the
glasses. Yep. Yeah, those. And then I think they also have a lot of really loyal client side hackers because they really care about ATO.
The ATO stuff is insane, dude. One of the things that they were saying with their vulnerabilities also is that if you tell them like, hey, I have this vulnerability and I think I can do X, Y, and Z with it, they will give you an authorization from this time to this time to try it out. And if you can actually prove it to them, they'll like do it. And then on top of that, they go and do their own investigation. So if they find more systems that are vulnerable to that vulnerability or that technique, they give you the max payout for that bug. This was just all that stuff that Farah was talking about during her talk. And it's a very interesting program. Dude, imagine like you're getting an SSRF on Facebook and Facebook says, cool, go wild and like show us what you can actually do with this, right?
Wow.
Cool.
That's cool that they give you like a time frame where they're like actively monitoring and like, you know, sort of figuring out what exactly you can do.
Shout out to Jason Grace on their team. He's like on their purple team and he's like in between some of the bug bounty stuff he was talking about. I think the way he explained it was very, very cool. It's like, hey, I was on a pen test myself and I found a blind XSS, but I asked him to let me explore it more. And he said, I went from blind XSS to XXC to RCE.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, that's like something that you don't see most programs let you do that. We stop at blind XSS. Like we get critical payouts for it, but I want to pop a shell on this admin panel if I can. Like that'd be really, really cool, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you can pivot on that'd be really awesome. Get access to the admin panel and then now you're attacking stuff that was never meant to be external. That's pretty rad that they let them do that. I really dig that. Yeah. I know that there have been a couple hackers recently, particularly hackers that are talented in client side stuff, sort of pivoting over to Meta to try them out as a long-term program, because it's not something you really, I mean, I say it's not something you do sort of for a short-term thing, but we've also had some success. I mean, Joel had some success doing it for an LHE and I've had some success doing an LHE with them in the past, but I definitely think it's better as a long-term, like this is my home base sort of program where they'll you learn the team, they treat you well, you get good bounties, you learn the ecosystem.
I mean, if you're spending 3 months on like a program like that and you get like a 50K bounty, that's a good return for 3 months of work, right?
Absolutely.
So I feel like with a lot of like the regular bug bounty programs, you have to do quantity to make up because of the bounty amounts aren't as high as you would expect them to be. But I think with a big program like that, I agree, dude.
Yeah, I agree. So you mentioned before you did the bug bounty workshop, man. Can you give me the TLDR of that? I wish I had been able to make it out there.
Well, unfortunately, we had labs ready and DigitalOcean had an incident. I think Adam caused an incident maybe, but he tweeted about saying I caused an incident.
I saw him tweet about that.
Yeah. I think two other name servers were up and we just couldn't spin up new things anymore. So like last minute, we had to change it. And I look at Jason, I go, so what do we do? He goes, we do what we do best, recon. I'm like, all right. So we're going back and forth talking about like different methods of finding domains and different things you can do. We actually talked about like some of the CSP stuff that he talked with you guys about. At B-Sides, and then we just did a little bit of recon and some tooling and things like that, and good turnaround. And then again, shout out to the Adobe team for letting us use them as a target for some of our recon stuff.
Sweet. Was the Adobe team out there?
Yeah, they were out there. They were doing a lot of, I think they're including Firefly on their bug bounty program. It's their like, from what I remember, it used to be like a note-taking thing, and I think now it does more. So they wanted to get that tested. It's like an AI meets meetings, and I think it's supposed to have, eventually I saw in the comments, like Twitter, that there's supposed to be like video editing too.
Very nice. Very nice. That sounds like that sounds like a good workshop.
Yeah.
There was a new Google product that launched that sounds kind of similar to that too. There was Google Video, I think they call it. It's like a new Google Docs, Google Drive type offering where it's
interesting.
Like sheets and slides and stuff, but it's a video editor that's based in your browser.
I wonder if it's like Replay where you can like live comment on videos, like, you know, for editing and things like that, or if you can
they showed a lot of that kind of stuff where it's, you know, it's very AI driven and like, you know, collaboration driven, so you can be like, you know, let's put this in here, and in the same ways that you can collaborate in Google Docs and stuff. But sounds like an interesting hacking target, it sounds like to me.
For sure. And Google, another one of those good
the home bases.
All of my devices like in front of me just lit up when I said that. stop. I'm not
I wish you had Google. Didn't have headphones. Just come back. Okay, Google, turn the lights on.
Yeah, exactly. don't steal that. All right, man. So it's been announced. It's out there. Your boys are hosting NahumCon. We are super excited for this, and we've got some announcements for this week, right?
Yeah, it's an exciting time. So people watching, May 24, May 25 is the conference. We have May 23rd is where CTF kicks off. 24th, we have workshops. And then on the 25th, we have all of our main talks. And I just announced on Twitter that Shubs is actually the keynote speaker, and he's gonna do some WAF bypasses. Originally it was like smaller WAF bypasses that he was gonna talk about. I'm actually like looking at his CFP right now to see what it was, but he's doing large attack surfaces more than anything else. Like, it's like if you have a large attack surface, this is what you do. So some of the things to talk about is like also using tooling, using some custom templates. He's going to talk about like FUF on a single host, then some bird plugins, and then he also has some bypasses for smuggling that he's going to talk about too.
Jeez, man, that guy has an endless source of content, I swear.
And if that wasn't enough, there's also a workshop for 2 hours on Friday on just WAF bypasses with labs and things like that. So
wow, with him or with no
it's
with him
it's so YSP Hack is one of our sponsors, and they wanted to do a talk on it, and it was like, it's like an hour and a half, and I'm like, dude, I can't do an hour and a half talk, let's do a workshop. And they're like, yes. So I know, I don't know about you guys, but I get like a shit ton of tweets that are like, hey, how do I do WAF bypasses, how do I do WAF things?
Dude, so many people, and like, I swear, because once you get in this industry, it's like into content creation in this industry, people will message you and they'll be like, hey, you know, I've got this XSS and I can't get past this WAF. And I'm like, okay, you know, I can do this. And then I always sit down for like, you know, a couple minutes and I'm like, let me bypass this thing. And then I just get tilted, you know, and I'm like, this is so annoying.
It's
but
hard,
there are some, there are some, you know, techniques that can help with it. So I'm excited to learn a little bit more about that. And I think there's a good ROI for us in particular with that sort of thing too, because we can help all these people DMing us.
Yeah, I know you guys did some stuff with WordPress recently, different sponsor, but we have a different sponsor coming in doing a workshop on WordPress hacking actually, and like finding vulns on WordPress plugins, how do you do it and things like that. And also there's CTF around there too. So I know you guys as critical thinking people that you have on your Discord were really active on that. So if they want to come and do some CTFs, you also have that too.
Very good, man. That's awesome. Very good. Yeah, we just actually, I want to say, Joel, earlier today is when we moved the my WordPress automation script into the, so I had some private automation that I built when I was really into WordPress plugin stuff in the beginning of this year. And essentially it monitors for any plugins entering a certain threshold of uses. And it also monitors for common code patterns, for vulnerabilities in various Ajax register functions within the WordPress code, that plugin code, and then it pushes to a Discord webhook whenever that gets in place. So essentially over the past couple months, I'll just randomly drop a WordPress plugin 0 day into the Critical Thinkers chat and be like, here you go, guys, just go ahead and report
this.
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah. But that's not all with NahumCon, right? I'm just excited for this last bit.
There's more.
You know, we try to keep the opportunities pretty clean here on Critical Thinking. You know, we try to keep the things that we talk about pretty relevant and add a lot of value to the listeners. And nothing adds value like $50,000. Am I right?
Financial value, a little bit of value. Yeah. So now we're just going to jump into it. Yeah. So the another sponsor was like Yahoo and the Paranoid specifically. And, you know, you guys have, I think, probably one of your first bug bounties was Yahoo.
It was, man. It was.
Same.
My MVH bill was from a Yahoo event.
Oh, the New York event.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're a sponsor. And, you know, with a lot of our sponsors, what we want to do is like, we want to think of like, how do they get value? And then we do this thing with NahumCon for community. I can talk about that later too, but how do we make it more fun for the community while also this like sponsors also happy, right? So they I got in a call with them. They're like, hey, we have 50,000. I go 15. They go, no, 50 in bonuses. And I go, okay, like that's insane. All right, like we're doing something big. And like, yeah, like obviously we can't give more, but, and like, you know, we want to like get people to get active. What can we do? And I'm like, okay, let's just like brainstorm. So we brainstorm a lot with them. Shout out to the Paranoids team. They were very, very good to go back and forth. Yeah, they're doing some amazing stuff. So yeah, $50,000 in bounties, and there is bonuses, and there's pretty much a bonus for everybody, dude. Like anyone that wants to try out this program, they can get a bonus.
You dropped a list here in the chat. Let me see if I can pull it up. Dude, there's a Critical Thinker bonus, isn't there?
So there's one called the Critical Thinker. There is one for, there's multiple. We don't want to mention everything, but if you have, you know, if you find something that's critical, it's probably going to get a bonus. Something with high, it's, you know, depending on the numbers, will I find it? It might get a bonus. Medium may get a bonus, but there's also like cool stuff. Like I don't know how long it's been since you guys have hacked on the bug bounty program.
It's been a little while for me.
So if you're a returning hacker, you know, you get reignited with the program, you may get a bonus. There is a lot of cool stuff in there. So don't, you know, first of all, like go find bugs. There's assets that are in scope that are going to get bonuses too. So don't worry about like, hey, am I going to qualify? There's so much in there that I feel like everyone could qualify. I feel like up to 50 people, maybe not 50 people, but there's a good 20, 30 people that could get bonuses.
I'm looking at these numbers. It may be close to that, man, because you've 10, got these 20, broken 30, out pretty well.
So. Yeah, 37 bonuses right now.
Oh my gosh.
It goes up to $10,000 for some, and then you know, up to $500 for some of the other ones.
So here's a little double click into the live hacking event life for you guys, really, with this, because one of the let's just talk about like one of the more advanced strategies when you become like in the live hacking event circuit is how do you optimize these bonuses? How do you hack on these targets, not only that are going to be getting you bounties and getting you enough bounties, but are also going to land you these bonuses that the companies just kind of throw money at these specific assets? So this is a cool opportunity to kind of feel what it feels like to have these bonuses tacked on like we get at the live hacking events all the time.
And funny you say that. That's literally when I sat down, I was like, how do I come up with 50k of bonuses? You know, like how do we do this so it's like more fun for everybody? I'm like, how do we do that live hacking events? You know, how do we do it where
you just ask
and you just pretty much think of like what are some of the cool bonuses that we had at these events? And there it is. So there's gonna be more information on this coming out soon. I think by the time this podcast comes out, a lot of it's gonna be announced. But yeah, if you're watching this, if you're a Critical Thinker, you're someone on their Discord, if you're watching this, not even on Discord at all, you know, you can hack, and it doesn't have to be on one platform either. It could be on either platform that the Yahoo program is hosted on too.
It's pretty sick, dude. Pretty sick opportunity. LHE stuff brought to the public here. Very good, dude. I really do also like the Reigniter thing. Like the people that used to be engaged with the Yahoo program and want to come back because they hold a lot of knowledge, right, in their heads and in their inbox, right, about the Yahoo program, and you can kind of bring that back in and reignite your engagement with that program.
It's the same thing with the hacking event. So you invite some of your top hackers because they have value, and then they get invited to the program for the events, right? So that's kind of the same idea. But Joel, do you want to give us one more? But wait, there's more.
But wait, there's more.
There's one more thing, more value, I think. And then also, I think with education and content creation, I think going to Vegas, I had a friend of mine that I will keep anonymous, but this person didn't want to stay for DEF CON 1 year at H1702. And it's like, hey, you should just stay. We'll get you a room. Just stay and hang out. And he went to H1702. And so he went to DEF CON and he was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like, I wonder why I've never done this. Like, I met so many different people that kind of like energized me, and I'm like super excited about it. And I never expected any of that. I want this person to just stay and hang out more. And this year, you know, we thought about like, okay, if this person calls me and tells me like, hey, that was really valuable for me, and they're already in the industry, they've done Vegas every year because of their job or whatever it is, what do we do for someone that has never had the chance to go to DEF CON? So as a part of the partnership with Yahoo, also one person is going to get a full ride scholarship to go to DEF CON. Which is your flight and hotel being paid for. I don't think there's going to be like food and stuff like that, unfortunately, but the big lift is on us. You know, we're going to book you a flight. We're going to book you a room, hopefully get you a badge, and you get to go and enjoy DEF CON from Thursday through Sunday and have a blast, and hopefully make some friends.
Do you think we can sneak him into H1702 as well?
That is a really good idea. I'm working on maybe also, getting that other half of the week, and like, because I think it's a really cool thing to go to H1702, dude, especially if you're bug bounty hunter already, right?
100%, man. That adds so much value. I think if me and you both pull out the puppy dog eyes on Caitlin or Jessica, we might be able to make it happen.
So I know they watch these podcasts. So Caitlin, Jessica, Ari, and Harley, you guys are watching this. We are going to beg you, please let us make this happen. But honestly,
please.
But I haven't thought about it that far. There's a little bit of a logistic nightmare with bringing someone to H1702 because it's somebody else's event, the customer, the client, and then
also they're gonna have to leave for the NDA stuff and stuff like that. So,
and then the community parts of it also, like, people are very entitled to some opinion sometimes, but we'll see. To be determined. We'll know in like a week or two. Maybe we'll announce that in the HomeCon. Who knows?
Very cool, man. Well, I am super excited either way. It's going to be a blast, and really looking forward to all that. Whoever lands the and this scholarship, this is for people that performed well in the Yahoo challenge, right?
It's going to be at random. We're not going to say, it's not just performance based. So you don't have to be the top of the tier hacker. It's just, we want someone that's going to put in the effort. So there is a little bit of effort there. So you have to get some sort of a valid submission. And then at random, we're going to pick somebody that's going to want to go to this event. And then the first person says no, we go to the next one until someone says yes.
Very solid, man. It's going to be like the real LHE experience. You got bonuses, you got free flights, free hotels, a bunch of community.
We just don't have a belt. Maybe I'll make my own Nahomsek belt and just
ship it. Nahom belt. Just take one of the belts and like just paste your face over it. That's good, man.
So that's all of it. So if people that want to get involved, even if you don't want to go to DEF CON, there's a lot of money for grabs. Please, like, go and hack on Yahoo and make some money. And that's addition to what you would get on those bounties too.
It's crazy. I'm super excited for NahomCon this year. It's gonna be a record setting one, man, I think, in the history of NahomCons.
It's our fifth year, cool. So we gotta go out with a bang, dude, for our fifth year.
Gotta go hard.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and shift the conversation. Let's go talk about some technical stuff. Okay. We got some cool CSP stuff and we got some CI/CD stuff. Where do we want to go?
We can start with, I think CI/CD would be cool because we can also talk about a little bit of a launch on some stuff that you guys have on your notes. But
that'll be real fun. Let me start with that then. Just to give Lupin his due here. So our boy Lupin, he came on the pod. We did an episode with him in Japan, and that was one of my favorite episodes to record, to be honest, because one, he's got so much passion and his accent's sexy, and the backdrop of that episode was really good. So one, go check out that episode. Two, our boy is launching a product. And it is a freaking amazing thing that has sort of stemmed from this whole CI/CD research that, man, I guess this whole dependency confusion thing stemmed from a live hacking event where AJ Chapman Alex Bearson and I were working on there. And Bearson did Chapman did have a part of that event, but it was a different thing. Alex Bearson and I were sort of working on PayPal related bugs, and this whole dependency confusion thing came out. And then, you know, Lupin sees this and he's like, this is a crazy industry, a crazy scope surrounding CI/CD stuff. And he's built this tool called DEPI, that he's going to be releasing. And this is an enterprise product to help secure the CI/CD chain. And I've seen this thing. All right, dude, hold on. Let me send you this link. This link is not public yet. But you got to go to this link and tell me that
I
this
saw
is
the
not
website,
the most...
dude. I
Did you see it? Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting design. It's a very cool design. It's very unique.
It's
and
crazy,
I know he's
right?
worked really hard on this because you know, him and I chat once in a while. He was one of the people that reached out to me when I went to my burnout and would just go back and forth a lot. And it's like, I'm so slammed with making this happen. And then when I saw this site, I'm like, holy crap, this is gorgeous.
Yeah, dude, it's an amazing product. And it's also just technically really interesting because he's been kind of keeping me in the loop while he's doing the research that powers this thing. And he's got so many like 0 days in all of these package management softwares that he uses to get this sort of dependency confusion. Wow. And so I'm really excited for that to launch. And I just wanted to give it a shout out here because it's a product that I really, really believe in. So if you haven't checked out CI/CD stuff, definitely check out, it's at www.lnh.tech/depi. It will be live by the time this podcast is live. So we can go ahead and shout it out.
Yeah, very cool stuff. I'm excited to see what he does with it. And yeah. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of research come out of it too with this being released.
Yeah, we're gonna have him on for an episode in a couple of weeks to talk about the technical details of that, which I'm super hyped for. But you've also been doing some CI/CD stuff, right?
Mine isn't so much like the dependency confusion stuff. Mine is just mostly on these couple of pen tests that I've been on. It's always like, hey, we want you to do a pen test, but we're not gonna give you credentials to start with. And it's like, great, love it. Like it's a phase one, right? But like, what do you do? Like, there's so much you can do with JavaScript files, and if it's like, if they're using some like framework, like say like Django or something, right? Then your chances are going to be a lot less. You know, Django is just an example, but like whatever PHP framework or whatever language they use. So like you got to just really think about it. But it all started with just like a .gitignore file with me. There was like four assets in scope, and it just started with like a .gitignore file that leaked a lot of like paths. And I'm like, if they have this file on here, like I wonder what else is on here too, right? Like what else can I find on these other apps that they own? So,
So wait, the .gitignore file, you were looking at that for things that they didn't want included in the GitHub repo, but
correct.
Might have been accessible via a web server somewhere?
Yeah. So if you look at gitignore, it's like for tracking, like it tells you like, hey, ignore these files, don't track them, right? And sometimes like they'll have like folders for like logs, they'll have like their upload folders in there, and it's just they don't want to change it or they don't want to track it. The upload one's like interesting if you can find some stuff. The logs one's interesting, but then like at the bottom there's also like configuration files sometimes, right? This one specifically, one of the companies had I don't remember what the path was, but they had like their GitLab CI files in there. Like you can see all the different repositories they work with, and you can look for dependency confusions in that way, right? But then it gets worse when they have like a config.json file in there, and it has like credentials inside. So you sort of think about like, hey, if there's like gitignore is one of them, you can't rely on like a all.txt word list, right? Like you can't just throw everything at it. You need to be very specific of like, hey, what is gitignore used for? What is GitLab CI YAML file for? And then finding specific names that are similar to it. And that's like where AI becomes super, super handy, dude.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. That technique is not one that I've actually super thought about. And I wonder if you could find some way to correlate GitHub repos to what you're seeing on a web server. Like you create a tool that correlates that either through like the .git file being exposed or something like that, and then create very high signal alerts where you download the .gitignore file, you pull the paths down, hit the web server on those paths, and then if any of those come back, you assume that that's going to be super interesting, which I imagine it will.
Yeah, and then the other thing is like if they're using some, you know, one tool on this asset, what other tools are they using on the other ones? Like if they have a config.json on this one, like what are some other like files that could be a JSON file that has credentials inside of it? I think the thing is, like, we can't think of those names. I don't know if you guys are like that, but I can't think of those things when I have this, like, rush of, like, oh my God, I found this. What else can I do? Right? Yeah. Like, tunnel vision on the same file name. So that's when, like, something like AI giving it, that's, Rezo has a really good command that hits GPT, and then it pulls, like, a list of files based on what you give it. So you give it, like, six files name, file names, like YAML files, dot files, and config files, and you go, hey, give me 50 more, and then some of those hit on some of the other web assets that .gitignore wasn't accessible, right? I don't see a lot of those anymore, but the ones that you see, the .gitignore, bug bounty programs, you don't see them because everyone's running templates now and doing brute forcing and things like that, but once in a while, you still see them pop up. It's interesting to dig into.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet with the popularity increase of Nuclei, you're not seeing as many of these, like, .git files being exposed and stuff like that in any meaningful way.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how people write a Nuclei template for a .gitignore file, because there is nothing that's, like, identified in the headers. They can say this is a .gitignore file. There is no, like, unless you find a word .yaml in there, maybe, but that's, like, very, I don't know, I think it could be a false positive.
It's hard to fingerprint, it's really hard to fingerprint, right? Yeah, that's true. I also think that whatever you do with mass recon, I think it's a whole nother sector. It's a whole nother distribution to do that one layer deeper, right? So, like, let's say, for example, you're scanning for .git everywhere, right? There's hundreds of people doing that. But there aren't hundreds of people hitting Gao, hitting way back, running a quick hits, a brute force list, taking that first layer of paths, and then running all those Nuclei templates under those paths as well. And I think that's, there's a lot of value,
especially with there. Like APIs and stuff like that too, right? If you, like, people hit, like, slash actuator on APIs, but they don't think about doing API or, like, API app names API and going down every folder, and you see a lot more of those than you see on, like, the web brute.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just as we continue to talk about recon stuff, every time you're,
I'm back. I'm back. Sorry. This camera is weird stuff sometimes.
That's fine. As we continue to talk about recon stuff, I always sort of dream about building some scanner that can effectively check for path traversal problems, essentially, where you can, and I'm sure stuff out there exists. I just haven't really figured it out yet. But I remember finding an RCE one time on www, right? And I just, all it was in, on a pretty well-known site too. Like, this is a household brand that's paying, you know, I think it was like 6K crits at the time. And it's go to www, do ./:// and then you get access to this backend piece. And you can just
.://
No, it just went straight from there. And so I keep on thinking, like, there has to be a good way to fingerprint where these traversals are happening. Like, you should be able to do just a normal .:// and then compare it to a .:// 2F or a .://
Yeah, I mean, you can do the byte size, right? 2F. Like, the response size, you can compare. And if it comes back as, like, a 500 or something, that you ignore it. But if it's like a 200, then there's probably something there.
If it's normalizing correctly, like, you take something that, of course, it's going to normalize correctly, and then, you know, try to do these permutations. And if they aren't the same, then you can say, okay, well, these actually should be the same response. So something sketchy is happening here. I don't know. It's probably really hard to get to be high signal, but I feel like there should be some way to do it.
I think it's going to be difficult to know what's garbage and what's not in a lot of these cases. Like, what is actually a result that you want versus, like, an error page or a random page that you don't really care about.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man. Last little topic we had. This is going to be a quick little pod today, because we spent so much time brainstorming about content creation stuff and critical thinking or steer stuff. But I did want to hit on CSP related stuff.
Yeah, so you mentioned in here you've got some CSP bypasses for Google Maps and some other Google products, actually. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I love these. I love that these things exist. These are such good little gadgets to have. So, yeah.
I think Google itself is just a gold mine for bypasses. Like, one of the number one things I look for is YouTube and Google when it comes to CSP bypasses. YouTube is, I think, my favorite one. Actually, last time I was here, I talked about finding an XSS at a live hacking event, and that company had a really hard CSP bypass, and YouTube was the one that works. So with YouTube, actually, for people that are watching, maybe we can talk about, you know, how CSP works. It pretty much allows you to call scripts, objects, images, files from trusted sources. They say it's to prevent multiple vulnerability types, but I say that's BS. It's probably for XSS mostly. More likely for modern applications.
Well, I don't know. I feel like you can do, and this last episode that we discussed with Johan, I mean, he just gave such a beautiful deep dive into CSP related stuff, and there are a lot of things you can do with it, like the form action related thing can prevent you from doing when you don't have XSS, but you can create these forms and sort of do a CSERF or a CSERF token leak. That can definitely be helpful. But and then obviously, of course, you've got anything that's relating to like cross-site leaks, it can also be limited by CSP, but certainly the primary function of it is to prevent cross-site scripting, which is really tricky to do when all of these sites keep on like having all these gadgets in place that allow us to pop stuff.
Yeah, so I think the YouTube one is one. I think you had one listed for Google
for Maps, right? So Maps, this one, I have to give credit where credit was due. I meant to mention this on the pod with Johan, and maybe we sort of shouted it out, but I want to say that was actually a tweet coming from him. Joel, do you know if that's right?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I want to say he tweeted out a couple weeks ago Google, like maps.googleapis.com bypass, a CSP bypass that is done via JSONP, right? Because one of the most common ways to bypass CSP is to find an endpoint where they're utilizing JSONP and then actually insert a full function call into the callback. And so I showed this one to Ben on the pre-recording, and Ben's like, oh yeah, I got like a couple of these. And he pulls out one for www.youtube.com, www.googleapis.com, www.google.com.
I think there's also another one for accounts. I can't find it, but it's like, if you hit the OAuth on google.com, there's like a callback function. You can do the same thing. I'm going to find that eventually because I just used it recently. But there's also that. I think it also goes beyond that too. Like, this is only when the companies allow you to do Google, they allow you to do YouTube, or they allow you to do like whatever WAF they use, or, you know, whatever companies that they're trusting, right? But there's also like the JSONP thing is also on their end. If they have an OAuth floor you can hit, or if they have like some random JSONP that you can find. It's a really interesting, it's a very creative. One of the first things I like to do is like always just do a site on Google, dorking site.com, and then looking for callbacks, for example. And you don't get them a lot of times, but there's been a few times we can find them, and it's really, really, really useful.
And these are pretty widely, I feel like when you see a CSP, they're often like, all right, start.google.com or start.google.apis.com or something like that. So having these JSON callbacks on these really trusted domains is super clutch. So we'll put these in the description of the episode. We'll drop them in the Hacker Notes as well. We'll probably tweet them out. So you should see them in many places if you follow Critical Thinking in any way. But thanks for sharing these, man, because these are definitely high value gadgets to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to be, for the critical thinkers soon, we're going to be putting together some sort of potential reference or collection of these gadgets for these types of things so that, you know, as you're hacking, as you're going through and you're sitting there and you're one step away from an awesome bug and you're like, dang, if only I had a CSP bypass for blank. Well, now you have a reference that you can come check and you can come see if somebody's already got one. That they've shared with the community. Well, so, stay tuned for that because we're going
to
be working on
this. As a critical thinker myself, I'm looking forward to it, guys. So,
Ben's like, oh, wait, I'm pulling it up right now.
I'm pulling it up right now. I'm like, hey, is this still there?
That's great. Yeah. Is this? Yeah, no, that's great, man. That's really good. And I guess I just wanted to shout out this isn't in the doc, so we're going off the thing there. But there was a really cool piece of research that I just can't get out of my head, which was essentially a scenario where you can't do this or with like the full CSP bypass, right? Where you can't do like a full function call in the callback, but you can do, you do have something that triggers JavaScript. So you're able to trigger it just doesn't allow you to do a function call. And so what this guy, did with his research that I saw was he would include a script, right? Like script dot, you know, whatever. And he would do like, as his callback, he would do opener dot child element dot child element dot child element dot child element dot child element, right? So these are all just dots and ASCII characters, which are all allowed in the callback, even secure callbacks. And then obviously it's doing some sort of function call at the end, or else it wouldn't be a JSONP callback. So he ends it with dot click. And then in JavaScript, you can pass in any parameters to a function, even if it doesn't take it, and it'll just kind of like shove them away. So then what he would do was he could click arbitrary buttons on a page that was the opener of that page. So you do a window.open, you redirect your original page to like an OAuth flow, and then you include that CSP, which will do go down on the parent page and click the approve button for an OAuth flow or something like that and approve your OAuth application. And I'm like, this is such a genius technique to be able to weaponize just one single function call to execute dot click on a parent
that?
Page.
How do you even like think of that?
I don't know, man. But when I read that, I literally sat there with my jaw open for a while because I'm like, wow, now you don't even really need a full CSP bypass in order to get some impact, because sometimes you see these JSONP endpoints and you can't introduce a function call or anything. So I'll see if I can track down that research and I'll put it in the show notes for this one, because I think I cannot give that. I've mentioned it on the pod before, but I cannot give that research enough shout outs. How creative.
Yeah, I would love to read it and understand how they did it once. There's been a couple of times when I have been stuck with like these callbacks where you can do a function. There's a couple other things too, like when you can't do parentheses sometimes for some reason, but you can do like the tack, the backwards tack is also one, but it just makes it
the back ticks. Yeah,
it makes it a lot harder to exploit though, but that's only if you're desperate for an alert of some sort to demonstrate it, right?
Seriously. And I think actually the cool thing about the research that he mentioned as well was, I think by default, every WordPress site has that gadget built in that you can't do the full function call on the callback, but you can do this thing that he's describing. So it's super easy to find a WordPress site on any of these victims, right? Like most of them have them set to like /blog or something like this, and then it reverse proxies to a WordPress site. So lots of really awesome gadgets there as well.
Awesome.
All right, man. Joel, I know you got a hard stop right now. Ben, anything else you want to shout out?
No, shout out to you guys for bringing me on this podcast and then also hosting the HomeCon, and hopefully the expectation is met with all the hype that we're building on the HomeCon this year.
Oh, dude, it's gonna be freaking great. I'm
sure. The schedule is live, so they can go and check it out. And then just a reminder, May 24th, May 25th is the main conference.
Awesome. And that's where can they check it out?
TheHomeCon.com. Go to TheHomeCon.com. There's a schedule on there. You'll see everything that's happening just on their website.
Awesome. Sweet. Awesome. That's a wrap on this pod. I think. Peace, everybody.
See you guys.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want more Critical Thinking content, head over to ctpb.show/discord. Join the Discord. There's lots of great conversations and chats going on over there. And if you want to support the show, there's the Discord subscriber tiers, which give you access to masterclasses, AMAs, hackalongs, exclusive scripts, and an exclusive chat channel with us. We'll see you there.